What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hall of Fame coaches, national champions, lottery picks, the best minds in basketball. Welcome into the Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome back to the Sidelines podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. Today's episode, I'm going to bring on Fox Sports producer Conrad Company to help me guide a conversation. We're going to talk mid-season college basketball. I'm going to give some Final Four picks, mid-season All-Americans. We'll look back at who the preseason All-Americans were and compare. We'll talk about who can knock off Duke. We'll go in depth about R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson. Plus, we'll talk about an improved Kentucky squad. Before I get to that conversation with Conrad, I want to make sure that you are supporting and subscribe to the Sidelines podcast. The best way to do that is to go over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Those things are very helpful. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is at Evan Daniels. Would love to know what you think about the podcast. Without further ado, let's jump to that conversation with Conrad Company.
It's time to go Minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now let's bring in Fox Sports colleague and producer and friend Conrad Company to the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. And I had Conrad on just before the start of the season to really break down the college basketball season and go through some preseason picks. Well, I wanted to bring him back now that we're at the midway point. College football's ending. NFL is heading into the playoffs, and I think there's going to be a focus more on college basketball from people around the country. So I wanted to bring in Conrad to kind of help guide this conversation. Conrad, what's up, man?
Hey, man. How's it going? Happy New Year. How are you?
I am doing great. Had a great New Year's Eve, a pretty busy December with a lot of traveling. What about you?
Oh, man, I had another great New Year's in L.A. as well. It's a quite magical place out here. But more importantly, college basketball actually is starting to become relevant again. Not that it's not in the first half of the year, but this is usually when people start tuning in, like you alluded to earlier. We're going to start right off with it, with what people want to hear about. Your preseason All-American list was Carson Edwards, Luke May, Caleb Martin, Dedrick Lawson, and R.J. Barrett. How are you feeling at the midway point about that list?
You know, I feel pretty good about it. There's really only two guys that would have changed. And I spent a little time coming up with what my midseason list would look like. And keeping, you know, R.J. Barrett, Carson Edwards, I think he's done enough to be on this list, averaging nearly 26 points a game, 44% from the field, and 40% from three. Maybe means as much to his team as anybody in the country. Dedrick Lawson, I think he's been absolutely tremendous. Nearly 20 points, over 10 rebounds a game. So those three that I had on my preseason list, I think they're on the midseason list too. The difference is I think Marcus Howard is a guy that needs to be considered a midseason All-American. 25 points a game. Twice he's gone for 45 points. 49 of 113 from three. This is a kid that just knows how to score the basketball, and he's doing it at a pretty ridiculous rate at Marquette. Six straight games over 20 points. So added him in the list. And then I think you have to go with Zion Williamson. He's really been the talk of college basketball. He's having a tremendous freshman campaign for Duke. Nearly 20 points a game, 9.4 rebounds a game. Everybody sees the dunks and the highlight reels, but this kid has been impressive across the board. If I would extend this list to six or had a six man, probably go with Gonzaga's Rui Hachimura. I think he's been a major bright spot for Gonzaga, having a tremendous season. So I think I did pretty good in the preseason, but I think Marcus Howard and Zion Williamson have to be on this list.
No, absolutely. Marcus Howard, if people out there have not watched this kid play basketball yet, I don't know how you feel about him, but when I watch him, I kind of watch a little bit of like Trae Young, just how he puts the ball up, how he moves around. He's a smaller guard, but man.
Yeah.
So let's move on to RJ Zion debate. People all along have said R.J. Barrett's going to be the number one pick, but now that they've seen Zion in college, a lot of people are coming out thinking he might be the number one pick. Where are you on this?
Well, right now I still have R.J. Barrett number one on my big board But I do think the gap has closed significantly. Zion has been better than I could have imagined he would be as a freshman in college basketball. I wasn't quite sure how everything would translate to the college level because he, you know, in high school, there was some bully ball. He wasn't always in great shape. He didn't shoot the ball well. But I think I was focused more on what he couldn't do rather than what he can. And he's just, you know, he's a once-in-a-generation type athlete. And, you know, vertically, he's ridiculous. He has the Duke record for max vertical. But he's so strong. He's playing harder than I ever saw him did in high school. He's doing a really good job of rebounding the basketball. If he gets a defender on his hip, it's a bucket. Now, all that said, why Zion's been great, and you're right, he has been the talk of college basketball. I think RJ Barrett's been pretty darn good too. I think he is maybe the safer pick at one right now. 24 points a game, 6.8 rebounds a game, 3.8 assists. At the beginning of the season, I thought he was shooting the ball pretty well. His percentage has tailed a little. I expect that to pick back up. But I just think the kid is so skilled. He can really score the basketball. He can do it in a variety of ways. I think he's a competitor. And Conrad, I think he's a two-way player. I think this guy really competes on defense, and he's going to be able to defend his position pretty well at the NBA level. So right now I'm going RJ Barrett, but that gap is certainly closing, and you could certainly make a case that Zion should be number one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember a time ever where there's been two freshmen on the same team to perform like this. But do you think, though, with Zion getting drafted in the top five, I mean, top three, really, do you think GMs are going to be worried about his lack of shooting, like a la Ben Simmons, how he can do a lot of things for you except score the basketball at will?
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be a concern, especially in this day and age where shooting is so valuable and so important. You know, it's really a shot maker's game. You know, I think that guys are going to really value the athleticism, obviously, the energy he plays with, his ability to rebound, his versatility. You know, he's a tremendous passer. But the shooting is a concern, and it's an area that he's going to have to develop and get better. You know, he can't shoot in the teens from three-point line. He's going to have to get it better than that. There's been a little progress, but not much to date. You would hope, you know, in the offseason when he can really focus and spend a lot of time working on his jump shot that he improves. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's an easy call. That's going to be a concern when it comes draft time is the shooting for sure.
If Ben Simmons is his comparable, then I'm sure any GM in the league will take him. But at the same time, 16% from three-pointers, 70% from the line. Now, going back to him and RJ as well, they're both kind of tweeners with the positions they play. Where do you see them, or what positions do you see them playing at the next level?
Well, I don't think RJ is a tweener at all. I think he's a straight two-guard in the NBA. I think he can guard that spot, and I think he certainly can play it on offense with that skill set and you know, his improving ability to score the basketball in a variety of ways. So I think he's a straight two guard. Zion, I think, probably is going to be best used as a face up four. I don't necessarily love the Ben Simmons comparison, Conrad. I'll be honest with you. I don't really think that there is a comparison for him. I think he's that unique. I think he's unlike a player that we've seen before. And I've seen a lot of people try to throw NBA guys at him, like Julius Randle, and you know, I've heard the Ben Simmons and a couple others. I just think he's so unique. He does this all totally different. I've never seen a player like him since I've been doing this. Vertically, he might be the best athlete that I've scouted. He's just so freakish and explosive. But he's unique. And honestly, you know, I don't want to say I missed on Ben Simmons, but Ben Simmons has been a lot better than I thought he would be. And he was similar in a sense that he was so unique. He was different than players we'd seen in the past, and that's exactly what Zion is. He's just, you know, I said he's maybe the best vertical athlete that I've scouted. Well, he's probably the most unique player that I've scouted too, and sometimes those are the ones that are hardest to evaluate. But obviously what he's doing in college is ridiculous, and you know, he's going to be a very good NBA player. I think with what he's shown in college, that you know, some of the stuff he's doing is going to be able to translate for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Whoever gets either one of these kids is going to be happy with them. I know that for sure. But people will come out to watch Zion off-rip, whether he's on a good team or a bad team. They'll be in the seats to watch him play. Sticking with this Duke team, though, they're number one team in the country. There's so many good teams behind them. Can anyone beat Duke come March, or can anyone top them in the ACC, let alone?
Yeah, I mean, somebody can beat them. You know, I think Virginia is a team that's sitting at 12-0. They're known for their defense. I think their style could really muck things up with Duke. This is a team that they beat Wisconsin, they beat Maryland, they beat VCU, but this is always a very good defensive team. Right now they're number 5 in adjusted efficiency and defense, but they're number 8 in offense. They've got some playmakers on that end. They've got a guy in Ty Jerome that is skilled and can really shoot. They've got a potential lottery pick in DeAndre Hunter. Kyle Guy is shooting a ridiculous 46% from 3 on the season. So they've got some players, and I think Virginia could certainly beat them. I think North Carolina could steal a game from them in the ACC. You know, I'm picking Duke to win the league, but those schools could certainly beat them. In terms of, you know, the national race, Duke is still my pick to win it all, but I think it's pretty clear that there are a number of teams that could really give them a run, whether that's Gonzaga, who's already beat them, whether it's Michigan, who's 13-0, and you know, they've got a guy in Iggy Brazdeikis that can really score. The team is defending at a ridiculous rate. There's a number of teams that could knock them off. I don't think it's as clear-cut as maybe people made it out to be when they had that great start to the season.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. And going right back into the whole Final Four discussion, your preseason Final Four picks were Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and Gonzaga. You willing to stay put on that, or has anyone moved up that spot into the Final Four for you?
Yeah, you know what? I when I was doing a little digging today and kind of trying to come up with who my current Final Four picks are, I didn't go back and even look because I didn't quite remember all four of who I had in the preseason. I knew I had Duke, and I think that they're still a Final Four team. I think they're the best team in the country. But the other teams that I have are Gonzaga, Michigan, who I just mentioned, 13-0, wins over North Carolina, Purdue, Villanova. They just bring so much to the table. I think that the way Iggy's playing, that offense, three of their top four scorers are shooting it better than 43% from three. They have shooting, and then the defense that I mentioned, they're number 4 in adjusted efficiency defense. So Michigan is a team that I would throw in that conversation, but they're actually the only new team to my Final Four. I think that Kentucky is still a Final Four caliber team. There was a lot of talk a couple weeks ago about kind of what's wrong with Kentucky, but they have stormed back. They're 10-2. They beat a top 10 team in North Carolina. They just beat their rival in Louisville. So those are the four for me right now: Kentucky, Michigan, Duke, and Gonzaga.
Staying on Kentucky real quick, if we're just talking about it, they're so young, but they have so much talent. I know as Kentucky fans out there, they need the instant gratification of how teams should be for Kentucky, how they want established, good teams with Calipari. If Calipari can get these guys to the Elite Eight or the Final Four, is this one of the best coaching jobs that he's done in his career?
Honestly, Conrad, no, it's not, because this is who we thought they would be at the beginning of the year. You know, everybody picked them as they were coming into the season the preseason number one until they got just demolished by Duke. That said, I understand kind of where you're going with that. Like, obviously, you know, 3 weeks ago, they were sitting at, I think, 7-2. They had just lost to Seton Hall. And there was just a lot of question marks about that team. I think they part of it, too, was, you know, the fan base was upset. They get beat by Duke by 1,000 points. They lose out on James Wiseman to Memphis, a guy they thought they were getting. There was just – they lose to Seton Hall in an overtime game. There was just some things not going their way. And I had a lot of people ask me, well, what's wrong with Kentucky? Well, the answer was they're young. You got to give that team time. They bounce back. They beat North Carolina. They beat Louisville. I think there was maybe some addition by subtraction when they lost Quade Green to a transfer, because they were really lacking identity at the point guard spot. You know, they had three. They were playing Quade, Ashton Hagens, and Emmanuel Quickly at the point guard spot. With Quade gone, I think that there's a kind of a longer leash for those other two. And it's really allowed Ashton Hagens to excel, especially on the defensive end. He's really had a coming out party. One of the most competitive players, by the way, Conrad, I've ever covered. I'd put him right up there with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Josh Jackson from that regard. But they still have size, length, and athleticism. And the questions about what's wrong with Kentucky, well, look, you've got to be patient. I think it's a reminder for everyone. it is you have to be patient with teams as young as this Kentucky group. You know, I think they were getting compared to that Duke group that came together so quickly. That's so rare, dude. Like, that doesn't happen. That's a unique situation. That Kentucky team, you got to be a little more patient with. And I think that their long-term projection on this season, a lot of it's going to depend on their shooting. Will Tyler Hero shoot it like he did against Louisville, where he's 4 of 6 from three and went off for 20-plus points? And then Keldon Johnson, over the last couple games, has been shooting at a ridiculous rate, which he wasn't doing early in the season. So I think that you just got to be patient with a team that is that young.
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, I guess what I was saying was that it seems like every year Kentucky has one or two kids that are a lottery pick. This year, I don't get that sense. I mean, Keldon Johnson is their number one NBA draft prospect as of right now from the sites that I've looked at, and he's not even listed in the top 10. So that's why I guess when I was curious about Coach Cal with this team, because usually when he takes the team to the national championship or the Final Four, he has those guys like Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I understand what you're saying, and you're right. Keldon Johnson is probably working his way up into being a top 10 draft pick. That said, outside of him, I don't know if there's anybody else in that roster, at least right now, that you're looking at and saying, oh, he's going to be a great player in the NBA. But they do have 7 McDonald's All-Americans. So this team is still loaded with talent. Another guy, Ashton Hagans, who would have been a McDonald's All-American if he hadn't graduated early. So there's plenty of talent. And I think when we heading into the season, they had all that talent, but then they also had the experience of a Reed Travis. They had a PJ Washington that came back. I think the expectations were extremely high. Now, if John Calipari makes a Final Four this year, is it a heck of a coaching job? Yes. Is it his best? I don't think so, but a very good job, obviously.
Okay, so Kentucky is staying in your Final Four. Now, one team I didn't hear in that Final Four, and they're still undefeated at this point, was your preseason sleeper in Nevada. If they go undefeated, are they going to get a one seed, and can they compete with these top teams?
I think they probably would get a one seed. I do think that they're going to go undefeated. They have a win over Arizona State. They've got a win, double-digit win over USC. The best team left on their schedule is Utah State. That's who they're going to play next. They're going to play them twice. I think the odds are that they're able to run the table. Now, it's pretty rare for a team to do that. But I think that they had enough firepower on the offensive end. And the truth is Caleb Martin's their best player, and he really hasn't played as efficient as he did last year, especially from shooting standpoint. But yeah, I think that they're going to run through the Mountain West. I can very well see them and think that they're going to go undefeated. And yeah, I think they'd be staring at a one seed.
Yeah, this Nevada team honestly kind of reminds me of that 03-04 Stanford Cardinals team that had Josh Childress. They had one loss going into the tournament, but they had a lot of talent. They were a lot of fun to watch, but they fell short when it came to the tournament time. So you think Nevada can keep with the big dogs and make it far in this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think even heading into the season, they were kind of a sexy pick for Final Four in the preseason. I think they're battle-tested. This is a team where most of this core was part of their Sweet 16 run last year. Musselman is obviously a very good coach. He's done a good job of building this roster. And the Martin twins, they can both score the basketball. Jordan Caroline, you know, those three guys were really the core of last year's run. They've been there. And I think that they've proven they can compete with anybody in the country. I do think that if you had a question mark, it's maybe their lack of depth. Musselman certainly rides those top 5-6 guys pretty hard, but it's a really good basketball team, and I think I could see them making a really deep run in March.
I know I would love to see it. There's always a place for a good Cinderella story, that's for sure. Now, moving on to a team that's not going to be in the Final Four, UCLA Bruins just got done firing Steve Alford. Now, I know you're pretty intertwined with this whole situation. Is there any names that you're hearing out there, and what happened with that whole situation?
Well, you know, I think at this point, you know, UCLA was sitting at 7-6. They had 5 double-digit losses, including a blowout to Cincinnati, a double-digit loss to Liberty. I think Steve had kind of just lost this group. It's obviously a team with some talent, but I think the truth is he lost his fan base a couple years ago, and was really hard for him to get it back. At this point, everyone saw this coming. I don't think that necessarily saw it coming mid-season, but I think, you know, after that loss to Liberty, it was pretty set in stone that by the end of the year, Steve Alford would probably be let go. I'm not a big believer in firing midseason. I don't see much of an advantage in that. I think the only reason to do that is to get a head start on someone else in terms of who you want to hire. But in terms of candidates, I think that the name that everyone's talking about is Fred Hoiberg, no longer with the Bulls, former Iowa State head coach. And I think the interesting thing, Conrad, about Fred Hoiberg is he really did it at Iowa State with transfers. So if UCLA is going to go all in and after Fred Hoiberg, they're really going to have to ease up on their transfer policy, because this is a school that it's not easy to get into. And the last staff had some issues with getting transfers and other players in. So I think if Fred Hoiberg is going to be an option, and Eric Musselman's name has been tossed around some too, I would say the same thing for him. They're going to have to ease up on letting some of those players in. Now, the other names I've heard is Mike Bray from Notre Dame. Earl Watson's name has been tossed around some, as has Arizona State's Bobby Hurley. I actually have two kind of outside-the-box surprise-type candidates, Conrad, and I'm not saying that I've heard these from UCLA sources, but I think that they would be interesting names and guys that I could see being very successful at UCLA. And I would say Kevin Keats, who's been he's done an extremely good job, not only at NC State, but also UNC Wilmington. It's outside the box. He hasn't really gone out to the West. And neither has the other guy that I was going to say, and that's Providence's Ed Cooley. I think both of those guys would do a tremendous job at UCLA. And I don't think that this job has a natural fit, Conrad. I don't think there's anybody that you just point to and say, hey, they need to be the head basketball coach at UCLA. They're going to try with some big names. I'm sure they blow a call into Billy Donovan. I don't see that they'll get him, but I think that they would probably throw a call into him. And we'll see what happens. The other thing, Conrad, is this is a tough job, and I think it's a little tougher than people realize. Obviously, that there are extremely high expectations. You know, they let go Ben Allen after he went to three Final Fours. And the reason I say it's tough is I think it lacks resources that other blue blood type jobs have. You know, they don't charter. They don't take private planes. You know, their head coach isn't sitting in first class when he does go recruit. So I think that there are some resource issues that I think some of these coaches, when they go in and sit down with the AD, that they're going to bring up.
I mean, when you look at UCLA from the outside, it's a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful school. They have such great traditions. But when you hear about them having limited resources, especially in this day and age, it would make me weary if I was a player or a coach wanting to go there as well.
Well, maybe limited is not the right word, because don't get me wrong, Conrad, this is still a tremendous job. The tradition, the recruiting base, like you can win at UCLA recruiting LA. That should be your primary focus, and you can do that. But there are some, you know, other factors in there. You know, there are middle of the road or back end of the road schools in the Big Ten, in the Big East, in the SEC, where their head coach flies exclusively private recruiting. That doesn't happen at UCLA. In fact, it really doesn't happen at a lot of the schools in the Pac-12. But just for an example, the resources don't necessarily match what the job is. Because, you know, I think when you think of UCLA, you think of it as an elite job. And it is, but there's just more to the story.
Now, to stick with recruiting, you wrote a story earlier this week that garnered a lot of attention. What are the changes to the revamped recruiting schedule, and why do you think it's a bad idea for everyone involved?
Yeah, so when the NCAA put together this commission on college basketball after the FBI investigation, this is a group led by Condoleezza Rice, they proposed a number of changes. And I think some of them that they came up with, like players being allowed to return to school if they don't get drafted, the early official visits, I like those changes. I'm good with those. The revamped recruiting schedule really is mind-boggling. And, you know, I think that – and what they said was they're trying to take away outside influences. The new schedule, Conrad, right now we have one April evaluation period where teams will be able to play in AAU events. They opened up MBPA Top 100 camp, which is the top 100 players in the country, Conrad, invited by the MBPA, and they play for a couple days. So college coaches will now be able to go to that. But here's where they really made some changes, and it's in July. Last year, there were three July evaluation periods, 4.5-day periods, consisted of AAU tournaments and stuff like that. This year, there's only going to be one. It's going to be the first live period weekend of July, and it will consist of Nike Peach Jam and Adidas' big AAU tournament and Under Armour's big AAU tournament. So they're keeping one AAU period weekend. They got rid of the other two. And they added two weekends in June where kids can play with their high school team. And they added a week in July where kids are going to play in regional camps. To be blunt, I think those are terrible ideas. One, when it comes to camp, they're the worst evaluation setting in high school basketball. Outside of USA basketball camp, which I think is a great setting, camps are very difficult to evaluate players, and the NCAA's grand idea is to have four sites with two camps at each site of 300 players each, so 2,400 players. Most of these guys never played, I'm sure, never played with each other before, lack familiarity, and college coaches are going to have to go into these environments and try to evaluate kids. I think it's an awful idea, and every college coach I've talked to has said it's an awful idea. I actually talked to more than 25 college coaches, and nobody was for this. The high school weekends is kind of mind-boggling because, one, the high school coaches didn't want this. Two, schools like IMG Academy, Oak Hill Academy, Paul the Sixth, these are schools with a number of all three of those have eight or more Division I players on their teams. So they're not even going to be allowed to participate. Paul the Sixth, because of the National Federation, IMG and Oak Hill, because they don't have their teams assembled in the summer. Their kids go home for the summer. So there's just so many holes with this new revamped recruiting schedule. And you can check out my story over on 24/7 Sports, where I went into it a little more detailed and had some comments and stuff from high school coaches. But the reaction across the board has been pretty negative about the revamped recruiting schedule. And I hopefully it's something the NCAA looks at, because the way things were set up before were pretty good. I'm not saying that they're shouldn't or couldn't be some changes, and I'm good with changes, but it needs to be changed for the betterment, not changed for the sake of change, and I think that's kind of what these changes were.
Sounds like for all parties involved, this isn't going to be a win situation, so I wonder why the NCAA went through with this. But I guess, and when it comes to the NCAA, there's always questions of what they're doing and why they're doing it. I guess we just have to get used to that, right?
You know, I think part of it, too, is the commission, you know, Condoleezza Rice, I could be wrong, but I go to a lot of AAU and high school events. I've never seen her at one. I don't know that she has that much of a feel on the recruiting schedule or a knowledge base of AAU basketball. You know, I just think it's unfortunate, because I don't think that this camp idea is a great one. I think 2,400 kids, camps of 300 each. I mean, it's just really going to be hard for college coaches to sift through. And then the high school weekends with a lot of kids not even being able to participate, it just doesn't add up, and hopefully that they'll revisit this.
I'm sure that she's probably too busy interviewing for the Browns head coach position a couple weeks ago. This probably got swept under the rug a little bit. That's probably why there's the issues. But if everyone out there wasn't caught up on college basketball at this point, now they are. As always, Evan, I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll have to get back and we'll have to go through your preseason, midseason picks at the end of the year and see how it all turned out.
For sure, man. I appreciate you jumping on the podcast. Had fun. So thanks, Conrad, for jumping on.
This is De'Aaron Fox.
Fox, who has his first 30-point game at Kentucky, has two more for 32 on the night.
Well, they said he was like John Wall.
And you're listening to The Sideline with Evan Daniels.
Before I let you guys go, I want to make sure that you are subscribed to the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. The best way to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Let me know what you think about the podcast. You can all shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is @EvanDaniels. As always, thanks for listening and have a great week.